Good morning, I'm Philip Hong, and welcome to the Best of Humble and Fred Friday, brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, The Chambers Plan, Geek Sky, Cannabis Career Network, and HomegrownKits.ca. Today on the show, we have some fun clips, as well as interviews from our archive. By the way, I'm Philip Hong, thank you so much for listening. If you're new to the program, I'm librarian for The Humble and Fred Show, and we've got 7 years of very interesting material just for you on today's show. And so, let's start with a fun segment, a wonderfully musical segment, in fact. We've got a singer. His name is Ron Hawkins. You might remember him. He's a legend. He's from Lowest of the Low. So let's hear from him now on The Best of Humble and Fred.
How you doing, man?
I'm good.
You all right?
It's early.
I know it is, pal. Ron Hawkins is here. Hey, Ron Hawkins!
Woo!
How are you, people? So we finally figured out which Ron Hawkins was here. And now we're all excited. How you been? Now, you know, you still live in Toronto, right?
Yes, I do. I live in at the hipster epicenter of the world at this point.
Where are you in the junction?
Ossington.
You're in Ossington.
Yeah. Ossington, we call it.
Wow.
Some people do.
Just another great part of this great city, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. So many neat little communities.
You know, it's funny. I was driving on around college in Ossington on yesterday morning around 9:45, and there's about a 3 or 4 block area where there's just nothing but cool little coffee shops and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I was talking to one of my daughters whose friend lives right at sort of Dovercourt in Oz, in that area, right? And she said, no, there's no Starbucks around here.
And that's true.
Well, there's about a 3 or 4 block part where there isn't. And I said, well, how can this? She goes, well, no, this neighborhood, they don't want them in there. I'm like, what do you mean they don't want them in there?
What she meant was there's no Starbucks in her house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny.
I remember when the second one went down in Parkdale and somebody spray painted on the side of it, Drake, you... this is all your fault, or something like that.
Oh, there's a better one in the Junction. Some printing company that's been there for 50 years. They went out of business. They wrote on their window, "Okay, hipsters, you win, and we're not telling you where we're going."
That's great.
It's great. A friend of ours says hi to say hi to you. Actually, it didn't say that. Actually, it does. It says right here, please say hello to Ron and David for me, if you would be so kind. Brother Bill, Neil Morrison.
Oh, my goodness. Where is he? Is he still in Vancouver?
He's in Vancouver.
Well, hello, Bill.
You know, it was funny. I was just talking about you coming here about a month ago or a few weeks ago, and I said, you know, I've always liked Ron's music, but I really don't know a lot about the band. You know, I'm too self-absorbed to care about anyone but myself. But he sent me a whole thing about you. He said, oh, he gave me some history. Told me that Buffalo loves you guys, apparently.
That's true.
What is that all about?
I think it's probably because The Edge, back in the day, extended as far as Buffalo. And at the time, they just fell in love with Canadian music. And strangely, we're exotic, I think. That close across the border. You know, you speak to certain... there's a certain thick Buffalonian accent that makes us sound like we're from Downton Abbey or something.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Ron, remember back in those days, there was a lot of Buffalo, Niagara Falls, New York nightclubs that attracted Canadian kids. Remember, it was always money at par, right? Canadian dollar at par.
Right.
And that was a big thing. And, you know, I was just thinking about that the other day. That's all sort of dried up. Because there was all sorts of neat places in just on the other side of the border for great music, and they loved Canadian music.
So I know a lot of people know the history. The band's been around for 25 years, and you sort of, like a lot of bands, you know, you had some success, and then you sort of drifted apart. And have you drifted back together again?
Drifting back together. Yes, I mean, the thing that used to happen was the band would break up. Like 1994, we broke up pretty acrimoniously, and I didn't even speak to Steven, the other guitar player, for 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And then we had a reunion, a big reunion that felt good. We put it all back together, and we did some stuff. And then we parted ways again. I did a solo record. Like, I've been doing a lot. Like, I've made 14 records. So in between Lowest of the Low, there's been the Rusty Nails, and there's been a bunch of solo records. So we'll do some stuff, then I go off and do some other stuff. And every time we would break it up, we would make a public statement, you know, how the band's breaking up and blah, 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 blah. And then we just stopped making public statements because we kept coming back together to do stuff.
Did you ever use an old public statement and say, we'll just recycle this, put a different date on it?
Sure, yeah. Why not?
How does that... so you didn't speak for 6 years.
Yeah.
Obviously, you had a disagreement. How does it... How do you all of a sudden one day decide, well, now we are going to speak and we'll even go as far as to play together again?
Well, it was
money.
It was classic sort of, you know, one part capitalism, one part culture, right? Like, mm-hmm. there was a lot of people bugging us for a long time to get back together strictly for the love of music. And mm-hmm. like, you know, Elliot Lefko was one of them, and he put pressure on us every year. And it was like, that's not going to happen, Elliot. Just drop the subject, right? And our manager was on us. And then at a certain point, it just was that sweet spot between, well, that's a lot of money they're offering us, and, you know, there's a clamor of people who want to see us, so let's mm-hmm. get to a table and see if we can have brunch together without killing each other. And we did that, and there was...
Did you have brunch in the Ossington area?
No, I think
it seems a lot of people like lining up for brunch.
we had brunch in Leslieville.
Even hipper.
I love controversy, if you want to allow us it. What would the problem be? Would it be over... Would you break up because of artistic stuff or money stuff, as usual?
No, it was because Steve was an ass.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. I'm just joking. That's
a
joke.
There you go.
There's
the soundbite today.
I think what it is bands get ground down mm-hmm. by being on the road,
sure.
being on this kind of hamster wheel where they send you out. You know, you have an idea what you want to do as an artist, and especially like a commitment to your audience. And we had a grassroots audience that built up from the bottom for a long time, and the record company kept saying, you know, they wanted us to go back out on the strength of Shakespeare in My Butt again, yet again, yet again. And we're like, well, we have this audience that's been with us for a long time that wants the new music we've been writing. And so you get into these philosophical debates about how long do you
keep playing those songs,
the machine, or how long do you
right.
be true to your muse, right? So that grinds people down. And I've told younger bands that when I talk to them about it, that, you know, what you need to do when you get to that point is just demand to take 6 months off or something. Take a break from each other,
mm-hmm.
and your band will survive. If you don't, your band won't survive.
Right. No.
Bands often talk about, especially bands that have had, you know, some success with a particular song. Do you ever get tired? I mean, obviously the fans of the band have grown with you, but a lot of them, you know, there's certain songs they want to hear, you know, Bleed a Little While Tonight, Salesman, Cheats and Liars. Do you get sick of playing those?
I did get sick of playing them, again, exactly for the reason I'm talking about, which is that they put you out mm-hmm. on the road for 280 shows in a row, or, you know, in a year. Then there's no way not to become a bit of a zombie or a bit of on autopilot at some shows, you know? Which, again, is not what your audience paid for. They paid for a fully engaged mm-hmm. performer.
Wasn't it Jim Cuddy who said that to us? Sometimes he's up on the stage and you go through a song and you can't remember, did I just play that song or not? It was one of the, it was like,
yeah, and you don't want to be
just so mechanical after a while. It's like, oh, boy.
And the dues you paid is so that you don't have to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I worked at Upper Canada Brewery every morning of the swing shift, the grave shift, and it's like one of the reasons you become a musician when you're 17 or 18 is so that hopefully you won't have a job that's mind-numbingly repetitive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get on the road and it's mind-numbingly repetitive.
Yeah.
So, and when that time in the set comes up to play Bleed a Little While Tonight, is it one of those things where, as you said, if it's show 170 out of 280, are you just like, oh my God, if I have to start this song again, I'm going to punch myself in the face?
Yeah, well, if you're politically mature, like I think I am or was, at the point you look down into your soul and you realize I'm not a minor, you know, like I'm a rock musician, you know, like suck it up, dude, and find that, you know, energy,
right,
and do it.
There's
and
lots of people that would kill to be doing this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you do your job because you're a spoiled brat anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
but you know, it's not what you would like to do, and the reason is it doesn't have to be that way. You could work it that there's another way to do it.
And it's interesting because sometimes you'll hear, you know, famous musicians do versions of their famous songs to keep themselves engaged. You know, I was thinking, like, I know that, you know, Sting probably can't stand playing some of that stuff again, but he's I just heard a on Coffee House a version of Roxanne, like mm-hmm. him doing a cover of his own song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's bored.
Because he's bored, but it was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Ron Hawkins is here. Ron would like you to know he doesn't hate Christmas. He just didn't do a Christmas song. So
I hate Christmas songs, if that's any help.
Yeah.
You hate them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a couple good ones.
The good ones, unfortunately, were written, I think, like 500 years ago and mm-hmm. are sung by a whole bunch of
Jewish
boys.
Guys in the middle of the summer.
500 years ago, a lot of us Jews got together and went, I know what we can do. We don't celebrate Christmas, but we can make some money off it. Sorry you had to hear that, Ron. That's just what happened. Irving Berlin went, I don't listen to Christmas Schmissmas. I'm going to a Chinese food restaurant. I'm dreaming of a...
Howard's Jewish, so this is okay.
Yeah,
this,
my partner's Jewish.
And even if I wasn't, it's still okay. Mm-hmm. Figure it out, Ron. I'm an artist.
I feel like I'm an MOT anyway, because my partner's a Jew, so...
You figure like what?
I'm an MOT.
Member of the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
I got that. You're like an honorary member of the tribe. Because you and I have been together so long.
I'll join any tribe. I don't care.
he's happy to be a part of you. You're happy to be asked.
This afternoon, we're going to join the Muzzies for a couple hours.
That's
true. We're going to Watan Kebab for our Christmas lunch because we love Afghanistani food. Mm-hmm. And this kid's dad's going to give it to us for free. I thought of you today, by the way. What? Hang on, Ron. We'll get back to you.
Why do you think I wore this shirt?
Oh, because you're all dressed up.
No, it's striped.
It's striped.
You won't see the food.
Oh. Why do you think I'm wearing this striped. Red?
Yeah.
This is perfect. Mm-hmm. I can cover this. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'll tell you later. I just thought, I heard somebody say something today like, you know, we usually get invited to about 8 parties a year.
They did?
Yeah. I heard him say that. And I thought, Fred didn't hear that. Fred will be like, what's wrong with me? Ron, back to you, because that's why you're here.
Enough about you guys.
That's true.
This is how we keep ourselves interested.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more to the venerable Ron Hawkins coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. He was from Lowest of the Low. You might remember that band. What a wonderful group. I'm Philip Hong on The Best of Humble and Fred Friday. First, we have a couple of very important announcements.
Go to fyimusicnews.ca. Subscribe to the newsletter. It offers a tightly written digest of key events and news of the day in Canada and beyond. At the start of each workday, the FYI website provides expanded features, including a weekly careers section and columns of interest by musicians and journalists such as Bill King. And it also offers you access to all the music charts. For more information, up-to-date music news, go to fyimusicnews.ca.
Spearhead Brewing Company, located in Kingston, Ontario. How about their Hawaiian Pale Ale? Try one. Fantastic. 6% West Coast Pale Ale, brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple, but just a hint, okay? Fantastic. Refreshingly dry finish, and that's a good description of this beer. Delicious. Citrusy, again, but just a hint. It's a wonderful brew, a 6%er. That is your West Coast Pale Ale, Hawaiian Pale Ale from Spearhead Brewing Company. Try one.
Yeah, very nice.
This is Humble and Fred.
Ron Hawkins is here. Ron, you are making new music.
Always.
Is it possible that we could do a Ron Hawkins superset?
Sure.
A double banger of Ron music. If you were, what's best for you? An old song, then a new song, then an old song. Tell me what would make you happy.
Let's see. Do you guys report to SOCAN?
We report to no man, my friend.
Because if you report to SOCAN, then I don't care what order we play them in.
Yeah,
we don't really report.
No, actually, we don't play enough music to have to.
Okay. Gotcha.
And,
then again,
and a live performance doesn't count anyway. Hey,
what would you
now, your cold's okay?
My cold sucks, but...
Do you need a lozenge?
No.
Okay.
Now, here's what I would say, though, because I know, obviously, certainly in the example, we're talking about getting tired of playing the music that you've done for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But if you want to play one of your new songs, why don't you do that, and then you don't have to then do a shortened version of something that'll just be a little easier on your throat.
Phil, microphone, you're up.
Wait till you hear this really cool setup that we have. Yeah, man, watch this.
Oh, that's amazing.
Okay, so we're going to
that is pretty...
There.
Gorilla.
It is Gorilla.
Hang on, let me turn that on.
Give me a level there, pal.
Tell me. Chicka, chicka, chicka. That sounds like...
Sounds pretty good, huh?
Yeah. I was going to say, too, that it's not... You know, I've come around to playing the old songs again without any petulance.
That's fine.
It's not a problem.
We all... You know what? We all grow up eventually.
Yeah.
Ron, if you could just get a little closer to that microphone.
Sure. Here I am.
There's your guitar. And we're just going to turn off our mics, and after you play this song, we'll come back on, and then we'll talk a little bit, then you play another song, then say, see ya!
That sounds good.
Ron Hawkins.
This is a song called Strum and Drag. Hey, hey! Little red rum dazed by the drag and the strum of days. Spend twiddling your thumbs in the urge to reverse, but you're cursed if you do. And you're damned if you don't. Just another soul in the house of the damned if you do. Yeah, you're doomed if you won't. Just another bucket in a leaky boat. Sweet little slave bush in that pen of a page and day.
can discreet little graves for you and everyone that you know. Oh, but time, no, it ain't on your side. It yawns, and the chasm is wide. From applause to sweet suicide, the deafening din of denial, cramping your style. Or you cover your ears of another candle while the fading years slip away. Or you're sliding along, surfing on the rhythm of the drag and strum, surfing on the drag and strum. Like steel strings up your spine, you're underpaid working overtime. And that chord's ringing all the while, singing stand and deliver through the shock and the shiver, child. Why must you always be such a D-I-P-S-H-I-T? Was it God, was it mama, philosophy? Or did Darwin leave you back on the shore, holding that oar? And humming that song, riding another season of the same old one. By the stone, by an old dead dog, hum another tune for the hollow-hearted ones. Well, that hallowed old hum, surfing on the rhythm of the drag and strum. Slip away, yeah, you're sliding along, humming to the rhythm of the drag and strum. Humming to the rhythm of the drag and strum. Humming to the rhythm of the drag and strum. Hey, hey!
What are you talking about?
There we go.
That was I love that song.
Cool.
Who wrote that?
I wrote
I'm
that.
I'm kidding.
Ronnie Hawkins wrote that.
Ronnie
Hawkins.
The Hawk. Do you have a relationship with Ronnie Hawkins?
I have a phone relationship with a lot of his fans that call me at 3 in the morning with a lot of drunk Irish ladies.
Yeah.
Looking for him. That's the only relationship I have.
Really, eh?
And I'm like, did you go through the phone book or something? Because, yeah. Because, yes, I am him, but I'm not him.
You've never thought of Ronnie and Ron together?
No, because I'm not a huge fan.
Two Ronnies.
No, you're not a huge fan. I've actually been to his house.
There's three reasons why I'm going to lose my Canadian passport.
Really?
I don't like Stompin' Tom.
Right.
I don't like Ronnie Hawkins, and I don't like Neil Young.
Really?
See, I thought you were going to say, like, for me, it's like, I thought I couldn't be Canadian because I didn't like Tim Hortons and I didn't think Stephen Harper was the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I thought they were going to kick me out.
Why wouldn't you like Neil Young? I can ask all three, but why Neil Young? He's the highest profile.
By saying that I don't like him, I don't mean I don't like him as a person. I don't like him politically. I like a lot of what he's about. I just don't like his music.
Interesting. And, you know, that's completely valid. I'm not a big Led Zeppelin fan, and you don't like AC/DC, so...
Or Led Zeppelin.
Or Led Zeppelin.
You know, it's funny that you say you don't like Neil Young. You don't like... who else don't you like?
Ronnie Hawkins.
Yeah.
And Stompin' Tom. I was never big on the Stompin' Tom thing either. Okay, I got the one song, the Hawkins.
Yeah, exactly.
Song. Great. Enough.
Oh, no, and then was didn't he do that? Don't give in.
No.
Oh, that's not him?
No, he did Sudbury Saturday Night.
Oh, yeah. Right. I never liked him either.
Ketchup Loves Potatoes.
Oh, that's right. Ketchup Loves Potatoes. Yeah, that was brutal.
I believe that's...
I don't like him, but we can name about a half dozen...
Ketchup Loves Potatoes. Love that.
I know, we can name like six of his songs.
About
I know
that.
We did.
Jesus
the Man
Christ.
On the Moon is a Newfie.
Really?
Yeah, you remember that. You
that
might
is,
think it's
true,
goofy,
though.
But the man on the moon is a newfie.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
sailing off to glory, weighing his golden dirty.
You're talking over my
that's
head.
That's been
now.
Scientifically proven.
Yeah. Yes.
That is, that's just science. Stephen Hawking. Actually, Stephen Hawking wrote a version of that.
Yes.
Man on the Moon is a newfie.
That actually sounded like Stompin' Tom.
That's right.
God rest his soul.
Stephen Hawking's and the songs of Stompin' Tom. Well, I don't give a because I didn't did it.
No,
I know that's not his song. Sorry.
Okay, yeah,
that was
am
the rodeo
I crazy
song.
To say that I should start a band called Rompin' Stephen Hawking?
Yes,
that's the best. You do
Rompin'
Hawking's
great.
Covers in yeah. Stephen Hawking. Mm-hmm.
This is how we do it.
Did you ever think, though, because of Ronnie Hawkins changing your name in some way other than just Ron, because of that confusion?
Like
not
to Ronald?
Really, because, you know, I grew up in the punk rock thing, and it's like it wasn't really an issue.
Totally detached, right?
Yeah, it was a pretty detached community from that community.
Mm-hmm. Except for all those ass calling you at 3 in the morning.
That's right. There's been some, you know, cabs of bikers show up at shows back when I was in the Rusty Nails, and I would go say to the doorman, before they pay, you might want to ask who they're here to see, because
right.
there could be problems.
Because they could get, once they find out it's not.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of all the versions of Ron that you could have changed. I'm changing my name to Ronaldo Hawkins.
LeBron Hawkins.
Ron Hawkins, let's, before you leave, because we certainly appreciate, that song was great. How do people get new Ron Hawkins music?
They can go to ronhawkins.com. They can go to iTunes. They can go to my shows, which I would prefer.
Yeah. Because you get some money.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to be performing in the next little while?
I just finished performing for a little while. I'm going to be, where will I be next?
We'll
right at the
them.
Forefront of my
You'll
life.
Be around is what you're
they're
saying.
They're at ronhawkins.com. Thank you. So here you go. You know, the music that you made and make with Lois of Low, I mean, it's really part of the Canadian landscape the last 25 years. Critically, commercially. You know, if you, I know, and you sounded great, by the way, for someone who has a cold. What would you do a little of something for us?
I would indeed.
What would that be?
I can do a song called Salesman Cheats and Lies.
Like, let's have a little. Once again, in concert, Ron Hawkins.
I know the only feeling you have is rage. And I know that I'd feel the same as you, but I think. You better take a good look around you, cause you're so pissed. You can't even find your drink, and sometimes it's wise to know which way the gun is pointing before you yell. Well, I see the whites of their eyes, and sometimes you'll find your senses all disjointed by the lines and wires of salesman cheats and lies. Well, she left without one word of tenderness, and no one saw you cry but me, yeah. And your friends could just say good riddance, I'm better without her, but well, fess up, you fall about diving into the dawn, yeah. And sometimes it's wise to know which way the car is going before you put your pedal down to the floor. And sometimes you'll find your senses all disjointed by the lines and wires of salesman cheats and lies, yeah. You laughing again, but don't worry, cause your secret's safe with me. And it's so strange, everybody's so caught up in worrying that they're what we wanted to be. And sometimes it's wise to know which way the car is going before you put your pedal down to the floor. Sometimes you'll find your senses all disjointed by the lines and wires of salesman cheats and lies. It's true, of salesman cheats and lies, of salesman cheats and lies.
Very nicely done. That was very, very nice. That woman there, Amanda Barker, sent me a note today saying that she once performed sexual activities to your music.
Cool.
And there she was, reliving those moments.
That actual song, right?
Yeah, that actual song, yeah. Mm-hmm. Studying for art history in first year.
She took a break and did some business with her.
Set the scene for us.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I had a radio show with this guy named Rob.
Right.
Who has since...
Rob or Rod?
Rob.
Is that what you called it
Rob
back then?
Rob Winger.
Having a radio show with someone?
Yeah. That's what we called it in the 90s.
I had a radio show with Freddie. We never did anything.
So this was in a control room?
You had? No. Oh. No. This was after. We both... He was really good at art history, and I wasn't as good, and he had really good notes, and my notes weren't that great, and I borrowed his notes.
So how good at art history was he?
Really good.
Really good.
He was really good at art history.
More importantly, how good at art history are you now?
Pretty good, actually.
Yeah, pretty good at art history.
He knew all the religious that I didn't know. So.
It rubbed off on you.
He definitely did rub off on her,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Not even so.
So while you were copulating, this was on in the background?
Mm-hmm. Often, yeah.
Nice. Mm.
Yeah, we had
Ronnie.
20%.
Ron! I mean,
20% new music, 30% CanCon, always in the background.
All right. Well, listen, that's we've had a great time with Ron Hawkins. I wonder if Ron Hawkins has had a good time as well.
I've had a very good time. I didn't expect to have such a good time this early in the morning.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
More fun and frivolity. Let me pronounce that properly. Frivolity coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. We have segments from the week and segments that you'll love. That's all coming up. This is The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online.
She's a rich girl. She don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soul.
This hour of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, and Cannabis Career Network.
We were talking about, you told me about this story yesterday. I, again, can't remember, excuse me, said, was it on the air or was it at our house? This character from Mexico, El Chapo, and he's a real guy. He's being tried in New York.
Yeah, right now.
Right now. And the story of El Chapo is a Netflix series.
Yes.
So I had a few hours to kill yesterday afternoon.
Oh.
And I started watching it.
Good?
Well, it's very good.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of it?
No, I got to start.
I saw the preview.
Okay. So, but it's one of those things. There's a couple things I wanted to mention. First of all, it's very good. It's a lot like if you like Narcos.
And how could you not?
Yeah, and you know how Netflix does that? If you like this, mm-hmm. you're going to. And they're right. They were right. They mm-hmm. know me. Mm-hmm. Netflix knows. Mm-hmm. I started watching it and I had a little bit of a momentary, like, do I really want to make this commitment? Because when I clicked on it, I thought it was a new series. It's season 3.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's been around for a while.
I know. I didn't realize it. And I had this weird, like, I don't know if I really want. It was almost like I was dating it. I was like, I turn it on, I'm like, do I want to make a commitment? Because you know what it's like. You start.
It's like 30 hours to watch.
Exactly. It's like, it's funny you say that, Tom. I'm like, I don't know if I want to invest this much time in El Chapo.
Well, I told you, that's the situation I was in. I kept seeing it, and I knew it had been around for a couple of years, and I thought, I watched Narcos, do I really want to do this? But now his trial has started in New York, and it just, that's what I'm doing. Like, today, when I go home, I'm going to start watching El Chapo. And, you know, it's just the season. Look at it outside.
It's El Chapo season.
Why not?
Well, I watched, so I was picking up Rachel. Sweet girl. She was, she's taking a Second City improv class.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
She just likes to, every sort of quarter, have a class that she goes to. So I was going to pick her up at 9 and bring her back here. So I had a few hours in the evening. I'm like, oh, try a little El Chapo. Yeah. You know, El Chapstick. And then after I got over my three-season thing, I started watching. And I'm like, okay, it's sort of like Narcos. And then it got really good. Then I went to, you know, episode 2. Then I'm like, okay, continue watching. Yeah, okay, sure. I'll do her up.
You so take it, the whole winter to watch it?
Please. Oh, winter. It's November
weekend.
15th. I promise you, by the time I get back from New York, I'll be chewing into that thing. It's pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on.
No, I'm just going to say that if you haven't seen Narcos, get ready for it's all in subtitles.
Is El Chapo as well?
Yes.
Okay. Which is fine. Narcos at the beginning, I couldn't stand that, but
I just got used to it.
Yeah. And it was so good. What's going on in New York right now? The latest development, again, the security around this guy is crazy. And yesterday, a juror broke down. They had to, the trial was interrupted because one of the jurors had a breakdown. They're too nervous because all the jurors have been sequestered. Their identity has been hidden. Mm-hmm. Because they're afraid these people could actually be killed.
Yeah.
As a statement by these drug cartels actually coming into New York and killing jurors. So one of them, it was just too much yesterday, for stress-related reasons, had to be withdrawn from the jury.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the cops with their bulletproof vests and everything, and it's just, they're afraid some kind of a statement's going to be made. You know, the second time this guy escaped in Mexico,
he was missing from his cell one day, and they went in. There was actually, they looked down, there was a tunnel that had been dug under his cell. And they think it took them like a year and a half to dig this tunnel from outside the prison up into his particular cell. And obviously, they had help from the inside. Mm-hmm. But it's just fascinating.
Well, mm-hmm. tunnels is how he got started.
Yeah.
There's a little Escobar thing going around. You'll love it.
Yeah.
But again, one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up is because you had told me about it. It's a real story, mm-hmm. and it's going on now. But there is that moment, and again, a bit of a moment of, I don't know if I got three seasons in me, man. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Do I have three seasons? You know that feeling? You know that feeling of like, I don't know, do I have, and as Sean just said, do I have 30 hours of my life to give to El Chapo?
Yes!
You know, in 30 hours, I could learn, you know, Spanish.
No, that's why the half-hour series is so good, or a British series. Mm-hmm. A British series makes you feel really accomplished.
Well, Bodyguard, 6 episodes, yes. You're done.
Story Wanderlust. Art.
By the way, that's Amanda Marker.
Everybody. Oh, hi. Oh, I just kicked poor little Sean out of his seat.
Lovely.
I'm watching Wanderlust right now. I watched it on the plane on the way down and then last night on the way back.
Just got back from FLA.
Yes, I did.
You just missed girlfriend Rachel. She
Florida.
GFR just wandered out of here. No, she told me last night you guys were like buddies now.
We are buddies, and we're going to have dinner next week. Yeah, maybe you'll be right. There. Maybe you won't.
There was farting at a dart tournament.
Farting at a dart tournament. This morning we're talking about drinking and curling, which is awesome, and playing darts. And is that the audio that I'm supposed to play?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scotsman Gary Anderson, a two-time world champion, and Dutchman Wesley Harms both blamed each other for dropping farts during a breathtaking Grand Slam of darts match. Anderson blew his opponent away 10-2 to move on to the quarterfinals, but Harms claimed his poor performance was due to his competitor farting on stage, leaving a fragrant smell. Anyway, this became, and it's cool, you know, because a lot of sporting events afterwards, you know, they interview the winner and see how he feels. And this was the interview with Scotsman Gary Anderson. I don't know. Tell me if you can understand what he's saying. But this was like a serious interview.
Well, before we play the audio, in this article, which is, I guess, a of a darts organization.
Mm-hmm. Dart.
The writer of the article says, personally, I hate that the world of darts is being torn asunder by someone's butt ceasing its slumber. I'm not sure if he's serious or not, but he says, there are a few critical moves that darts needs to do in order to protect players' noses in the future. Install infrared cameras and advance fart tracking.
But you talk about stereotypes, eh? Like the curlers getting drunk.
Oh, yeah.
A bunch of guys throwing darts, farting and just before the
eating,
guy. Yeah.
They're all eating ham. What are those things?
Haggis?
No.
Hams?
No, look. You know what bars they have, like...
pickled eggs.
Pickled eggs.
Yeah, and ham. Chips.
They have pig's feet.
I can smell it now.
Pig's feet and pepperettes, which are good.
Pepperettes and Jameson.
All right, here's... I think that person's just having some fun. Here's the guy.
Just spoke to Wesley, and besides that, he said you were a class player, and you let him alive in the first session. He said that it was smelly on the stage.
Wesley had farted on stage. Did he?
No. I think he thinks you did it.
You can put your finger up. There'll be no smell there. I thought he had and I went, that's dirty. It was bad.
He just invited the interviewer to put his finger up. He won't smell anything.
It's brilliant.
It was bad.
That's what he said.
It was a stink. I thought it was him. And he started playing better. I went, must have needed to get some wind out.
Yeah. He started playing better.
Yeah.
Because he must have needed to get some wind out.
Oh, wow. He was lighter.
That is really one of my favorite accents.
Scottish? You can understand
Well, I've been there a couple times. Because when you're around them for... Because the first few days I'm there, I have no idea what anyone's saying.
Right.
And then about day three or four, you start to see, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Put your finger up there. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a wee bunny.
That's what he said. You can put your finger up there now. You won't smell a thing.
He thought it was you.
Oh, no. Hands up. Swear on my kid's life. So help me God, nothing crossed.
But it was smelly anyway.
It was smelly.
I thought he... He's saying I thought he... That was awesome.
Ooh. And it's funny, what he says, I swear on my kid's life. When guys do that, it's like, you know what? I think you did it.
Yeah, you probably.
Wow. You know what you're saying?
I just ran my kids off. I didn't do it.
You're like, seriously.
Now you're those starting to, now you're starting to lose
it.
Me.
Those who, thank you. Those who smelt it.
No. Those who, yeah. No. Yeah, those who smelt it, dealt it. Oh. Those who denied it, supplied it.
Right.
Those who smelt it, dealt it.
That's the Boston version.
That's day one.
But isn't there knelt it? Those
no, there's
knelt
no
it.
Knelt it.
But if you,
I was like, where are you going with? Those
know.
Who knelt it, divided it, and those who explained it, denied it. What?
I might have gotten it wrong.
Is that from Boston?
That's
New
Boston.
Brunswick, in New Brunswick. Those who took the fish up the
fish,
dish,
up the desk,
smelt it.
That boy.
If you all see right. the video, he even puts his hands up. Oh, like, oh. I
just don't know the kid's life.
Yeah.
I swear. Okay, who's the ballet kid? The who's the Scottish ballet? Billy Elliot. Okay, oh, Billy Elliot.
You know,
all right.
Great strategy go. On a. Have you ever watched the darts though?
Oh yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
It really is fat. Like 5,000 people going crazy. But that would be a great strategy because that guy's got to go right back in that space, right? Mm-hmm. Like he has to stand in that area to throw the next dart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you crease one. Wow.
You eat something that you're maybe a little allergic to.
You know, I haven't
go through
farted in front of girlfriend Rachel yet. But the other night, I let one go in bed that was so. And she was. But for a second, I was like, oh, I went. Because I couldn't remember if she was there or not. But it was like. It was so loud. And so it rattled my rib cage.
Oh, my God.
It woke me up.
It woke you up?
It woke me up.
What about her?
No, she wasn't there.
She
thought. My first thought was, oh, my God. And then I was like, ooh, she's not there. Just stand.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
There's more to the Best of Humble and Fred this week. I'm Philip Hong on the Best of Humble and Fred, on air and online. First, a couple of very, very important announcements.
I'll tell you what, as we all age, one of the things we have to be concerned about, of course, is retirement. And that's why the sweet mountain man, Tim Niblett is your guy. He's a, I believe he's a portfolio expert. Is he not, Phil?
Portfolio manager at James.
Raymond James.
Is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund.
Yes.
The Sherps will be back in this week, of course, and he'll have another interesting topic. You know, last week he talked about bonuses. What if you get yourself a nice bonus? You qualify for a bonus at work, and then all of a sudden you have this check, and it's a wad of cash, and you think, what should I do with it? Well, he can help you with that advice. Do you buy RSPs, RESPs, depending on your situation, tax-free savings loans? Hey, you might just want to have some fun with it. But it's something to think about when you come into a lump sum of money. Just how do you spend it? How do you spend it wisely? Even if it's just tax implications. He's the Retirement Sherpa. RetirementSherpa.ca. He's Tim Niblett, and he is the guy for you.
Nice.
And you.
Why don't you tell people a little bit about Strain Print? Because, you know, it's perfect for guys like you, you know, that are a little bit, you know, you haven't had a lot of experience recently, and you don't know what kind of things are available in the world of cannabis.
Yes. Use cannabis better with the free Strain Print companion app that will help you learn how much more rewarding and beneficial your experience with cannabis can be. The app can be easily downloaded for free on the Apple or Google Play Store, okay? Now, it's fantastic. Say you have some kind of an ailment. You go to Strain Print, you put in what that ailment is, and it will recommend the strain of cannabis that could work best for you. It's fantastic. Learn from others on your cannabis journey by simply tapping the Explore tab on the app. You can see what strains are providing the highest efficiency for symptom treatment. What more could you ask? It really is amazing. It's the Strain Print app through Strain Print. Mm-hmm. All right. Apple or Google Play. Just, again, search Strain Print, and there it will be. Could be a lifesaver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Or no.
This is Humble and Fred.
I had a pretty disappointing weekend from the standpoint that I was, you know, as most of you know, I was on my way to New York with my daughter, Charlie. She's moved there, and I was going to spend the weekend, help her get settled, look for some places, and we get to Pearson on Thursday. I got there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I left Pearson at 9:30 p.m. having spent the entire day sitting on an airplane, being delayed, canceled, and delayed. I never went to New York this weekend. Charlie didn't get out till Friday. The weather on Thursday was just the perfect storm, no pun intended, of it was bad here, but that's not the problem. And for you people who are traveling in the winter, those airplanes have no trouble taking off through weather, for the most part. It's where you're going is more important as far as cancellation. And LaGuardia, for 3 hours Thursday afternoon, was in a ground stop, which means...
Snow?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's... The reason I use that phrase is it's not used very often. A full ground stop means nobody coming in and out, which is unusual, because usually what they'll do is they'll have some activity in terms of leaving the airport. But it was so bad in New York. And as I said to Charlie, she was on a different plane. We were texting back and forth. And I said, you know, this could be a blessing, because we thought we were still going to get there. I said, because Dan Duran, the weatherman from Peterborough. At some point in the afternoon, I'm on the plane. He texts me. And he said, I don't know if you're in New York yet, but apparently they're having incredible delays getting around the city, as you can imagine. Some people, Charlie was telling me later, one of her friends who works in this New York City was in like a 3-hour Uber ride to get home from the airport because it was madness. And I said to her, you know, if we don't get in till late tonight, that'll be good, because by then maybe some of this will have calmed down. So I'm setting the stage for how long this was taking us. And through the entire process, you've been through this, most people have, where when I go to an airport, I just get into this mode of, I'm okay, these things take time, very calm, delays and lineups and all this. So I was in a very calm state of mind the entire day. A long day at the airport, very calm, and in lineups all day long. And as you can imagine, when all these flights got canceled, trying to get out of there was madness. Getting a cab was madness. So I'm with Charlie's work partner, James, and Charlie had gone through the baggage area to go start to try and find a new flight. She went to get to the phone.
Yes.
So I've got a huge cart filled with everyone's bags, and so does James. And we're in this big lineup to get out of the baggage area. And the odd person's butting in and cutting in. And we're sort of going, you know, like, well, does that person not see that this is where the line is? And all of a sudden, these two, I don't know, mid-20s gentlemen, just like about 30 feet in front of us, just butt right in. And I've had enough. So
Doc has had enough.
I've had enough.
Yes.
And it's like, what I'm going to tell you I said is so lame. But I don't know. I couldn't come up with anything else. I felt that I needed to say something on behalf of everyone. So I said this. I went, no, no, no. Just like that. No.
Like you say to a dog.
Like you say to a dog.
Right.
But I didn't know what else to say. And the one gentleman, then I see that he's holding on to the other gentleman's arm. Oh. He turns around and he makes the motion like his friend's blind.
Well, okay.
I know, and I'm like...
But the guy that was holding his arm
wasn't blind.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
The guy holding his arm wasn't blind.
No.
This changes the whole complexion.
Exactly.
Oh.
And he tried to use... Here's what he did. He tried to use his blind friend as a way to cut in the line. But I said, no.
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 No. No, I said. And he makes the motion like my friend's blind. And I'm like, you're not blind.
Did you say that to him?
In my mind, I did. You know, at first when he...
So wait a minute. So he seems to think
go anywhere.
So his idea was it wasn't, excuse my friend because he's blind. It was he's blind, so we should be able to butt in?
Yeah.
That was the deal?
That was the deal.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I know. But it was one of those social encounters where, like, I didn't know the guy was blind. And then as soon as it was funny because my first reaction when he went, you know, kind of indicated my friend can't see, I got quite embarrassed.
Sure.
Like I had done. Then I realized, no, wait a second. Well, you can see. And you know where the line was. Butter.
I was going to say this really has nothing to do with a blind guy, but really he may have been a co-conspirator. Because they thought, you know, we'll go into the crowded airport and you take me by the arm. But the fact that I'm blind, I may be able to get you in a preferred position.
Oh, yeah.
So they were sort of co-conspirators.
They were.
And did the blind man say anything?
No. There was no... There weren't.
And did the seeing eye man, did he say anything?
No, he just made the indication.
And that
like
was it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then what happened? Did they get out of the line?
No, they just moseyed right in front of us.
So your no didn't have any impact.
Had no effect.
No.
The reason I told it that way though is because it was 9 hours of buildup of being in lines and waiting and being patient.
You get a pass on this one.
Thank you.
No, you do. If it was a blind man all on his own, he had a white cane and he was smacking everybody,
in front of you, and you went no.
You know what I mean? And it didn't know. You'd say, "Hey, buddy, come on here." You'd grab him by the arm and pull him in. But I don't.
I know this isn't the way it's done.
That's very underhanded.
And and the fact that he indicated that his friend was blind and that's why we're going anywhere we want. At first, I went, "Oh, like you're embarrassed," and then I was like, "Well, it all hit me quickly. Like, well, you're butting in. We can't fault him. He can't see a line." When I first yelled, no,
not no, no.
Like, it's so lame. I was tired. I didn't know what. I mean, partly I did it to make James laugh. You know, no, like that.
And they didn't respond verbally.
Just they made I didn't see that the guy was blind and I didn't see that the guy was holding on to another person, but it all happened. He sort of turned around, made some indication like the guy can't see.
So he's waving into his
face. Was he wearing sunglasses?
Yes. No.
I know. It seems like,
isn't it funny where we're in those situations? Like, I really wanted to express outrage, but I had nothing else but no.
Sure. And there's poor logistics at the airport too, right? Because you guys are stuck in one line, right? At the end of the day.
Have you ever been, this has happened to me a couple of other times way when I was young where I've been detained. Where I've been taken out of the customs into what they call the secondary interview area. Have you ever had that happen?
No, but Delise has.
It's intimidating.
But Delise has all those bangles on her wrist, and you're supposed to take your jewelry off.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes she bypasses the machine, you know, with your hands up.
Yes.
For that reason.
The smart scanner.
So they gave her... She's, a couple of times, been given a little extra.
Right.
Not into another room or anything, but...
So
just you know the deluxe.
So you know nowadays you go through most of this process automatically, and they print out a receipt once you've done sort of the customs scan, where you get your picture taken, you put in your passport, and it prints out a document.
Yes,
and then you hand that to the customs guy. So my document gets printed out, and it's got I could tell. Something was up because it had a big X across.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
As soon as it came out, I'm like, well, that can't be good.
So,
I'm like, what? And I was holding on to it. And even the first human I spoke to at customs didn't say anything, took my passport, asked me where I was going, did the regular stuff. And then as soon as that part was over, escorted me into another room and just sat me there in this long... counter with a few customs people, and I'm sitting there by myself for a full 20 minutes before anyone speaks to me. Like, it's intimidating, and I sat there thinking, I know I haven't done anything wrong, but I feel like I have now. This was before I yelled at a blind guy.
Are they going to bring something up that I forgot about?
Yeah. No.
I haven't even yelled at the blind guy yet. I sat there for a good long time. Maybe it wasn't 20 minutes, but it was certainly over 10, gusting to 15, where no one was speaking to me. I finally say to somebody, "Excuse me, sir, is there something I can do to help speed up the process?" Type of chat.
Yeah, they don't like to hear that.
No.
And the guy says, "No, we'll be right with you."
Oh, he was all right then?
Yeah, he was fine.
Okay.
And a few more minutes come by and pass, and they bring me up to the counter, ask me about... And here's the only thing I was worried about, is I checked a bag for Charlie with all her clothes in it.
Mm.
And I thought, if they go and get my bag, the one that I've checked, because he asked me, "Did you check a bag?" I said, "Yes," because I had my carry-on with me, which they went through.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, if they ask me, I'm just going to tell them the truth. My daughter is...
I like lacy panties.
Exactly. My daughter's moving to the stage, but these are mine, and I look good in them.
Yeah. Okay? Nice blouse.
Don't judge me. Anyway, but I thought I'd just tell the truth that she was... You know, moving to the States on a certain type of visa, and I'm taking some of her clothes. But it never got to that. It just was a very intimidating process. Again, knowing I did nothing wrong. And when it was all over, they were very nice. When it was over, had a little joking back and forth with the guy, because I asked him, I said, how long have you lived in Canada? He's a big guy, and he said, this is now 3 years. I go, well, you must love living in the best country in the world. And he was like, no, and he told me all the reasons it's not, and how you have to wait for hospital visits. And I said, I can give you one reason it's better, but I won't tell you until you give me my passport back. And he handed it over, and I went, Trump, and he laughed. It was all great. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's intimidating when you're in that situation.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
This is Humble and Fred.
The best of Humble and Fred, powered by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, the Chambers Plan, Gig Sky, Strain Print, and Cannabis Career Network.
She said, now son, please beware.
This is the second hour of the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you so much for listening, by the way. We're powered by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, the Chambers Plan, Gig Sky, Cannabis Career Network, and HomegrownKits.ca. In this segment of the show, we are featuring some wonderful archive segments. I know, they're archive segments, so what are you going to do? Add mustard to it? Well, we have some wonderful timeless conversation, and believe me, these are moments of Humble and Fred's lives together. So in this segment of the show, we're going to start with a cure for gout or Howard's inflammation. We're going to hear more about that, as well as certain golfing injuries. Now on the best of Humble and Fred.
I was meeting with my group last night, living with gouty toe.
Gout's anonymous.
Gout. Living with the gout toe. I'm just a guy. Now I'm a guy walking around going, so when people say to me, how are you doing, Howard? Which sometimes people inquire. Now I've got to say, great. Except for the gout. The gout? Are you kidding me? How did I end up here at Gout's on Gout Street? I take care of myself. I stopped drinking. Now I'm producing... kind of acid am I producing?
Uric
acid. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to the doctor?
Not yet. I'm taking care of... What's he going to tell me? First of all, you know, I'm a doctor. He's a doctor. We talk doctor stuff. What's he going to say? Hey, Howie. He calls me Howie. Hey, Howie. Guess what? You got gout. I go, yeah, that's why I'm here. I got it in my big toe. Classic gout gout location.
The same thing happened to me last time I went to my doctor. I said, hey, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And he said, don't do that. He said, don't do that. And I left.
That's right.
What?
I said, hey, doctor, it hurts when I do this. He said, don't do that.
Don't
do that. You have to hear it.
I always, what was that? Was that a Groucho?
No, it was, I think it was Henny Youngman.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Henny.
Henny. No one calls themselves Henny anymore. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just a guy. I'm living with gout now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this last night. I mean, that's a conversation. And I know I mentioned this in this other form on the show. I know it's going to sound like I'm repeating myself, but I have a new twist. Because I mentioned the day before that, you know, if you listen to the evolution of the podcast, in 7 years it's gone from, hey, I'm, you know, banging some 24-year-old to, and now I've got gouts. Anyway, but I was thinking about that last night. There's a conversation. I've known you in my 20s, 30s, 40s, and now my 50s. So when we met each other in my late 20s, your early 30s, no part of our conversation was ever like, hey, how was your weekend, man? Oh, great. I got hammered Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday had a gout flare-up.
Right. Then like, I got shingles.
But I did get shingles.
What?
In my 30s.
Oh, no.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that. I thought it was just a 6-year-old thing, right?
I did, too.
A 90-year-old thing.
I had early onset shingles.
Oh.
Early onset.
Yeah, that was painful, by the way.
No, I know, but they didn't call it that, did they?
Yeah.
Did they?
Do you know, I remember going into Hal's office.
Oh, no, I know. I know you had them young, but they actually called them early onset?
No, I just made that up.
No, I thought so.
Yeah. No, but I had officially had shingles. Right around my chest, and it was only in one line. It's a nerve line right around my chest, all the way around my back. You know, you were saying about your mom and her gout. You were saying yesterday that it got so bad sometimes that she couldn't have the sheet on her foot.
Yeah,
because it would irritate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the same thing with the shingles. God, listen to me. I had the same thing with the shingles. Is I couldn't have any fabric against it. It was just
irritating.
Well, and painful, burning.
Yeah.
Because it's a nerve, not injury, it's a nerve malady.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the herpes zoster virus, if you must know. Anyway, now I'm talking, like, shouldn't we have figured gout out by now? Doesn't it sound like something that was around in the 1800s?
Right, like polio and other things like that. Flu, Spanish flu.
Well, they have figured it out.
Well, I know, but it's like, haven't we eliminated gout in our lifetime?
Well, you can by being careful with your diet.
Well, now I got to be careful with my diet. Don't want to do that. I like...
You talk about those conversations, and I've said it to my sweet Dilys many times. Let's have a pact that when we get into our late 60s and 70s, when we're around people, we don't talk about our ailments.
Mm-hmm. I love that pact.
Because it gets right out of hand.
Yeah.
You know, my parents weren't too bad with it, but, you know, you'd call and you'd get a rundown of the doctor's appointments and stuff, because it can be depressing. And it doesn't change anything.
No.
And the other day I went to pick up a prescription. There's this old guy. And you know, a lot of old people, they don't have people to talk to. So when they get the chance, that seems to be their favorite subject.
Right.
What, gout or their maladies?
No, just what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there and I got a prescription. I want to talk to the pharmacist. But just before me is this man about 75 years old. And you could just tell he was desperate to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets the pharmacist, and the stuff he's saying. Then Tuesday, I'm going up to the Civic Hospital, and I got to see, I think it's like 2:15 is my appointment. Now, he's going to tell me what I have to do as far as the next couple of months. So then after that, you know, my knee's still bugging me, so I'm going to have to go see the orthopedic guy. And it's like, in the pharmacist, you can see him drifting away, right?
That's right.
It had nothing to do with the actual medicine he was getting that day. And I thought, that's the guy's world now. Like, get a hobby.
You know, I'm around a lot of guys sort of between 55 and 70 that are golfers. And now I've noticed that a lot of the conversation is, did you hear Buddy? He's getting his hip replaced.
I know.
And I heard about Buddy the last time I had this conversation, or overheard a conversation about a buddy who was getting both hips replaced, I guess, at the same time. And my reaction is always the same. Yeah, but he's fat. He's probably fat. Because I see a lot of big fat guys getting hips and knees.
No, I know. Hey, wonderful they can do that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, I don't want to, just before we get off gout, and thank you so much for all the people that are sending me gout remedies. To me, it sounds like, hey, did you hear Howard had scurvy? Honestly, I was thinking that last night. I'm like, is that a conversation my daughter's going to be having? Oh, yeah, I think my dad has something wrong with his foot. Is it scurvy?
No, it's smallpox.
Smallpox? Is it the TB?
Yeah. Oh, you got the consumption of some sort.
Yeah, I've got the consumption. Anyway.
Got some snake oil on the side there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just sounds like something that should have been eliminated before I got it.
A couple of weeks ago. You know, I broke my foot. I'm getting some x-rays.
Mm-hmm. Well, you broke your foot?
So I'm sitting in the waiting room, and this guy blows by me on crutches.
Oh. F this, F that. I'm so sick of this place. I can't be bothered. People, they treat you like shit around here. I can't stand this place.
Then he goes into the bathroom, and I hear all this banging around and smashing around, and he had to give a urine sample. So then he comes out, and he gets the urine sample, he slams it on the desk, and then grabs one of his crutches and throws it. It hits the chair beside me.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Son of a bitch.
So I said, hey, buddy. And he turns around, and he looks at me, and I know the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've known the guy in Brampton for years and years and years.
Oh.
And he looked like hell. But then he proceeds to tell me he's in Ottawa at some concert, slips on the ice, falls, breaks his hip.
Jeez. He's your age?
He'd be a little older.
Mm-hmm.
Falls, breaks his hip. They do emergency surgery. They end up making, in the end, one leg is about a half inch shorter than the other because of this surgery.
Mm.
And he told me ever since then his life has been hell because it hurts. It's awkward. You can't walk right.
No.
There's an ache all the time. And he said, it's turned my life upside down. So I said, that explains the little performance here? And he goes, yeah, that explains the performance. He said, because I come into the hospital, and he says, I so don't want to be here. All because I fell one night. This has become my world. And I said, I don't like the attitude of the people around here. I don't like the way they treat me. Our health care isn't nearly what they think it is, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
I said, Mark, felt bad for the guy. And then you're sitting there going, I'm a little broken foot here. You know, it's...
Yeah.
as bad as you think you have it. There's there's always someone worse. And why is it that someone worse makes you feel better? Like, ha, ha, ha.
Well, because you think it's human nature. You think, okay, well, my foot's got a... You had a slight break in the top of your foot, right? Slight break.
Have I ever explained the whole thing to you? Did I tell you when my next appointment is on this?
Sure you
on
did.
On this bitch? It's next Tuesday.
Okay. I don't know how you're 10:45. I don't know how you're going to fit that in with all your other appointments. Yeah. Because it's human nature to think, well, I've got it bad, but not as bad as cranky half inch?
Yeah.
So Jody Sokolov sent me a note. Hey, Humble, Happy New Year. Because, you know, the Rosh Hashanah was, I think it's over now.
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Yo!
You know, I think in the Jewish calendar, it's like 67:15 or something.
Wow.
And, of course, the Jewish joke every year is, oh, I keep writing 67:14 on my checks. Who writes checks anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Jody says, Happy New Year, re the gout. It is painful and will keep coming back, she says. Advice, see your doctor or a rheumatologist.
Really?
Now we got to go to the rheumatologist? There are links to gout, high uric acid levels, and heart health. She says you can get medication, but what I'm going to not go the medication route because I've gotten a few other people message me yesterday and saying there's a thing, there's lots of stuff you can take, kind of like
Sulpermeno, palmetto.
Yeah, that thing you were taking for your spongy prostate. Mm-hmm.
Saw palmetto? Metal or whatever?
Celery seeds. You apparently make a celery seed.
Isn't it just easier to take a pill for a couple of days?
Well, I don't know. But you're supposed to get a big bunch of celery seeds, and then you cook them in a pot.
Yeah.
And then you make a tea, and you drink it. And when my buddy told me about the celery seed tea...
Uh-huh.
I just thought, this is like that in the Clampets and the Hillbillies when one of the kids would get sick, Ellie Mae or Jethro, and Granny would make a poultice mm-hmm. out of like mustard and, mm-hmm. and a bunch of gauze. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm making a mustard celery seed poultice for my gouty toe. That's great.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more timeless archive conversations coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. First, we have a couple of very important announcements.
When you're down and troubled and you need
a chamber plan.
Canada's number one plan for employee benefits, the Chamber's Plan, Canada's leading group benefit plan for small business. Hey, go to chamberplan.ca and get a free quote. It's that simple. Find out how your small business can qualify to have company benefits. It's fantastic. 30,000 Canadian businesses are now part of this. It's been around for 40 years, so that makes it very stable. And it's a simple thing to get involved with. Very straightforward. Flexibility, you know, they have pooled benefits, all those things that make it possible for small businesses to get together and have a plan. Health and dental insurance, it's fantastic. Simple, stable, simple, stable, smart. It's the Chamber of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, chamberplan.ca. Hey, Gig Sky, let's talk Gig Sky. Stay connected to the internet with cellular data only plans in over 190 countries and regions. Add an eSIM cellular data plan in minutes on iPhone XS, iPhone XS Max, and iPhone XR. Use the dual SIM iPhone cellular data only setting with Gig Sky to stay connected in all these countries. It's fantastic. All right, GigSky has been a trusted global data provider for Apple users since 2015. Choose the GigSky cellular data only plan that's right for you. No strings attached. And they have all sorts of plans at great prices. All right.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. You're listening to a tantalizing conversation on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. From our archives, here's a timeless segment, a very lovely segment, and it features Humble and Fred fans. We're going to hear more about you nice people, as well as buttering bread.
So we had a meeting yesterday, Fred and I, and then we had to come back to this neighborhood because Freddie had dropped his car off, and there was a little time to kill, so
I took Fred to one of my places down here, a place called Stoney's.
Okay.
It's originally was like an Oakville bakery on Kerr Street, which is this... The one cool street in Oakville is actually Kerr Street.
Mm-hmm. There's a Pete's Pizza on it, right?
And yeah, actually. And then there's a bakery and a restaurant. So I said, Freddie, let's go to the Stoney's. And we walk in, and immediately, what happens? A lovely woman.
This woman comes over to our table and says, I hate to disturb you guys, but I'm a big fan, longtime listener, right back into the 80s. So nice to see you. You both look good. And
that's lovely.
I enjoyed your work over the years. And what are you doing now? Working at Stoney's?
Yeah, they thought we were there. Bussing tables. Yes. No, she said, are you guys bussing tables?
Yeah.
So we order our food.
People will think we're Jehovah's, though.
That's what they'll think.
Oh, okay.
We're selling.
Hey, we're Jehovah's.
We work in partnership with Enbridge. We're the best. We're the
Hey, listen to Humble and Fred. While I'm here, can I look at your furnace?
There's a great natural gas. We're offering natural gas.
I don't know if you've already thought of this, but could I shoddy the clipboard? I've always wanted to show up to somebody's house with a clipboard. Yeah. That makes you look like you're there for a reason.
Yeah, that's why it's there.
So we order our food. Fred had the blackened salmon shrimp thing I recommended.
It was fantastic.
Good.
It was like salmon topped with shrimp. Like on a bun, served like a hamburger. It was
like a ciabatta bun?
It was fantastic. No, it wasn't. It was soft. Ciabatta's harder, right?
Is it like a pun?
Calabrese was the
ciabatta?
Yeah.
Ciabatta.
So in your grammar lesson for Italian, C-I, it's always cha. C-I-A or G-I-A would be ja.
Is that
like Giovanni, not Giovanni, right?
Okay, all right.
Is that a ciabatta or are you just happy to see
me? So, whatever you had, it was great. I hope you enjoyed it. I had the Reuben.
Did you?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Did you now? Shocker.
Racial profiling.
Shocker.
I had this foreskin on rye.
Howard Duty goes right up to the thing and he says, what do you have for juice?
Yeah.
She said, you might like the Reuben, sir.
That's right.
I love a Reuben.
Actually, there was a line. It said, regular folk. And then you, and they had a little star. It said I lined up in that line.
They hadn't painted over it since the 40s.
It started to fade. So if you're wondering what's the story all about, I mentioned before the break that we had dinner together, Amanda and I, and that dinner was very slow and just picking at food. And Barker sits down. She goes, are you hungry? I go, I'm not that hungry. He goes, I'm not that hungry. Next thing you know, it's 2 hours later. We've ordered 18 pieces of everything.
We've eaten the ocean 2 hours
later. But Fred and I, we sat down after we got our food, and we sat down next to this woman who was very excited to see us. She was sitting with two other women. And here's the truth. We hadn't gotten our food. Because what they do is you go to a counter, order it, they give you a number, they bring it to your table.
Okay.
So appreciate that.
Okay.
So we sit down. The minute we sit down, we have just ordered. We sit down, immediately this woman approaches us and says hello.
Gets up from her table, which is filled with food. Sandwiches, salads, paninis, and the like.
She had, it looked like a chicken Caesar wrap.
She had two
with
wraps.
Salad.
With salad.
Sounds good.
Amazing. No, I think it was one wrap cut in half, actually.
Okay, it was two halves.
Okay.
It was.
To be fair, he's right. It was one wrap cut in two.
Yes.
But this is the point.
Who orders two wraps?
Why would you order two wraps?
It's too much.
Two wraps for?
Although last night, if we'd gone to one more place, I could have done a wrap.
Yeah, we could have just kept eating.
I just kept getting hungrier.
Wrap it up.
So, Fred and I sit down. Remember, we've just sat down. We have a number. I believe it was 9.
Okay.
These three women have all their food. This woman gets up from her food. Humble and Fred sits down. Fred and I chat. We get served our food some number of minutes later. More chatting. We just start eating like we do.
Right.
We
eat like someone's going to steal it.
Right.
We eat like orangutans. Seriously. It's not like we're doing this in person. It's just eating. And at one point, he points out to me. He goes, she hasn't even touched her wrap. I'm like, what? I'm just eating. I don't even want to be interrupted. He goes, oh, look. He goes, look. She hasn't even touched. She's picking through her salad.
Okay.
We get our food, like minutes later, eat it, and finish it, and she hasn't touched her wraps.
What?
Yeah.
Was she talking?
Yeah, they were talking. There was four women there, and it looked to me like a, you know, a weekly, let's get together and have lunch.
I love that.
But yeah, she hadn't even picked up one of the wraps yet when we had finished beginning. I think even paid the bill, and she hadn't touched a wrap.
We finished eating, paid the bill, and were ready to leave. And she was still picking through her salad. And frankly, the two of us were fascinated by
it. Now, this was a thin woman, and maybe, you know, are there extremes? And the thing is, I think she was a slow eater. She was talking to people.
Yeah, but the other two
still,
didn't.
No, two, I know.
They hadn't eaten much of their mains either.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know.
They're but just that's, all sitting around sipping air.
do you?
I like the tapping.
You've read, and I have too, many times over the years. And Delise has pointed this out to me. The importance of chewing, digesting, sitting. Chewing, digesting, sitting. She does it. Like, we sit down to have dinner, and I'm done, and Dahl is hard at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then I'm done, and I look at her, and more than half of her meal's there. And we basically eat the same thing in the same amount. Look at her, look at me.
Well, you and I sat down yesterday, and when the food came, it was like we dislocated our lower jaws and just went, seriously, it was like, if you hadn't pointed out to me that she hadn't touched her wrap, I'd have just been like, And then when I noticed it, it was like I couldn't stop noticing it. I was like, when is she going to? It was starting to make me a little bit antsy. Like, when are you going to touch the wrap? And when it was all over, we said goodbye. Nice meeting you. And it was all I could do not to just grab one of the wraps and run.
Yeah.
Like, here, let me help you with that.
Maybe she was trying to fill up on salad first so that she only had half the wrap and then took the other half home.
Probably.
She's just so full.
Probably.
Just such a big salad.
But the point is me and Bruddy Boy here. We just.
Yeah. Well, you had places to go. These bitches were around just to sit around and talk to each other. So, food's secondary.
You know, I also have a buddy, Donnie Patterson, no relation. He's the same way. He takes, like, if you give him a steak, he'll cut the whole steak up before he has one piece. Like, and it goes on and on forever. And then, of course, he comes back at me like, you're not even tasting it.
Poor manners, though. You're not supposed to do that.
What?
You're not supposed to cut the whole thing up before you eat it. You're supposed to do it one at a time.
Unless you're a giant baby.
It's like, you know what? Here's something.
Oh, you're hearing this, Patterson?
Yeah, no, seriously.
Probably listening.
Unless you sit there with a giant baby bib and have to cut all your food so you make sure you get it all.
I'm going to do a PSA here. If you have a roll or bread or any bread product at a restaurant, do not cut it in half and slather it with butter or whatever.
What?
It's piece by piece. You butter it piece by piece.
Please,
that's etiquette. That's etiquette.
According to who? The same person that put a K in front of knob?
Emily. Probably. Emily Post.
It's I before E, but make sure you rip the bread as opposed to... Why wouldn't
it's
you
rude.
Cut... It's what?
It's rude.
To cut the bread?
Maybe it's a class thing, but that's
Do you that's mean the little dinner rolls, or do you
it's,
mean the
it's
loaf?
It's very
or?
Like... It's very like, I work in a factory.
See, I can't keep up with that. That's why I stay home.
No, I mean, that's always been the rule.
Whatever you shouldn't do, that's probably what I'm doing.
Well, I want to tell you, the Glassmans of Moose Jaw, we were not bread people. We weren't. We weren't matzah people either, okay, Semites? I was always fascinated when I would go to the Goyim's home and they would serve bread with every meal.
We never did that.
We did.
But no, some people I grew up with, my buddy Guy Greener, his family was like that, no matter what was being served, bread was being served with it. I think Lady Friend's family was a little bit like that, too, because they're sort of white trash. they're sort of white trashy. But they always had, there was bread, and we just were never, what?
Sort of white trash. Sort of white trashy. No, you're not trying to make a point, are you?
The point is, there's a little bit of bitterness left. I don't know.
Is there?
Anyway, the point is, some folks are like that, and some meals seem to lend themselves to that.
Yeah.
Now, being a person of the world, I've had Italian food where bread is served with the food. It's kind of a compliment. Mm-hmm. I've never really noticed, and I'm fascinated to find out, where is the etiquette in slicing the bread and buttering it?
To pre-do it? That's a rule. That's like what fork to use.
Is it?
Yeah.
Which I don't.
Piece by piece, and you put a little bit of butter. If you want a bit of butter on that piece, then you put a bit of butter, and that goes in your mouth.
And by the way, I'm not arguing, because I'm not as I mentioned, bread wasn't really part of my growing up.
Yeah, but it's the same thing with a steak. If you're pre-cutting it, it's like,
You hear that, Patterson?
Piece by piece. That, I mean, that's proper.
Does Donnie also throw a few Cheerios down on his plate too? Just because that's what little kids do. It's like, I'll have a little bit of meat. I'll have some Cheerios.
No, and a couple of times I said, "Man, you're a slow eater." Well, look at you. You don't even taste it. You're inhaling it. So he's we right have this though. Little back. Well, I know he is. I know. I know he's right.
I'm the same way. Look at the way we ate yesterday. It was insane. It was over in 4 minutes.
I totally agree. I mean, my argument is here. I'm here to eat, not to talk and not to socialize necessarily, usually. Mm-hmm. I'm here to eat. And I like it hot.
Yeah, but
that's fair.
Usually in a restaurant, unless you're there by yourself, in between on your shift at the factory, you're just there to go and grab. You're there. We were there to socialize.
I could talk while I'm chewing.
No, I know, sir. I know. I saw that.
This is Humble and Fred.
We are hopping off the Humble and Fred time machine, and we're featuring more highlights from the week. It's all coming up on the Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you so much for listening on air and online. Please keep listening.
Humble and Fred, Humble and Fred,
It's been 1 week since you looked at me. Cocked your head to the side and said I'm angry.
Now, back to the second hour of the Best of Humble and Fred, powered by The Chambers Plan, FYI Music News, Gig Sky, The Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, Cannabis Career Network, and Strain Print. You'll think you're looking at Aquaman.
I summon fish to the dish. I was telling Fred, I was talking to Charlie Glassman, who left home on Friday. Mm-hmm. And now is residing in New York. Well, she's not living in New York. This is the part that made me laugh. I was telling Freddie. I was talking to Charlie yesterday after her first day at her new job. Her office is on Park Avenue in the mid-30s, sort of midtown Manhattan. And I was talking to her last night, and I said, you know, just sort of jokingly, I said, so how's my friend living in New York City? I mean, one of the five boroughs, which is Brooklyn. You know, Brooklyn, Queens, whatever. And right away, she goes, well, I work in Manhattan. I go, easy there, New York state of mind. Mm-hmm. Like 3 days in, she's already a snotty New Yorker.
Right.
But it was just really funny. I was like, okay, I know, sweetie. You work in Manhattan, but you're going to be living in Brooklyn, so easy now.
That's great.
No, I just loved it. And, it was funny because she was talking to me while they were trying to find the train, the proper subway to get her back home.
Right.
And it was fascinating, you know, because I was on speaker and her friend James were trying to figure out, they were somewhere around 21st and something, but there she is. And I could just hear her and James trying to figure out, okay, do we go across the street? Is that where we take it? And it was great. It was, you know, it was good for me as her dad, because as I said to you yesterday, it worked out for the best that I didn't go with her, I think, because the sooner she's out there feeling things out on her own, the better, I guess. And I could just tell, you know, she found her way to work. They had a great first day at the job, and they went out for dinner in Manhattan. And then they were going home, and I don't know. It just made me feel good that she was, you know, sort of figuring things out on her first day. And, you know, as I said to her sister yesterday, we were having dinner last night, Spencer and I, and I said, you know, it's not like I would see Charlie every day. And you don't see, you know, like you're talking about Danny. You don't see him you see him once a month or so, and...
Yeah. Yep. This person says, could only hear the calls through your headphones via the mics on the podcast. But I'm sure if the actual radio broadcast must have been fine.
Sure. We might need the great Jim Carr because it might have been the recording source.
What?
I think that.
Yeah, but what about during the radio broadcast? Would it have been okay?
Yeah, it would have been okay, but it just didn't, all right. It just didn't go to the right spot.
We shouldn't have these meetings during the show.
That's true.
Hey, did you see yesterday a new $10 bill was released?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Viola Desmond. I don't want to even say a black activist, but... You know, it was the movie theater in Halifax, and, you know, the smugness of Canadians where all that stuff happened in the States. Well, this was Canada, Viola Desmond back, I think back in the 60s even,
yes.
Or 50s.
Yes,
in sitting in a movie theater and asked to go sit in the balcony. Blacks weren't allowed. Anyway, she pushed back, and anyway, $10 bill issued in her honor yesterday. And I was thinking, you know, it sure doesn't mean what it used to. Mm-hmm. Because I noticed this the other day when I'm going through like Metro or Sobeys or what, nobody pays with cash. Nobody. It's all cards. It's all debit. It's all Visa. Mm-hmm. So it's almost a bit of a disappointment. You're honored with a $10 bill and they're like, where are they? Like, who's using them?
They're swiping their Visas.
Who's going to see it? It's really.
You know what's cash only, though? Faux restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
And drug dealers.
Yeah.
You know, like, when the dispensaries were just down the street, you know, mm-hmm. those people are, they're just dealing in cash. It's cash money. And last night we went out for, and they're cash-only businesses.
Hey, they both have herbs.
Like, when you're up front and say cash only, mm-hmm. there's a little soup restaurant in Peterborough, too, that's like that. Mm. When you're does the word not get out? Are you not audited on... But, you know, driving ranges used to be like that, too.
Some of them still are.
All the ones in Brampton were all cash only.
Used to be one at 407. Mm-hmm. Legendary one.
Oh,
was there for years.
Because there's no accountability. There's no consumption.
But I know where you're heading. Like, the little restaurant that I go to, that we went to last night, mm-hmm. and there's a couple on Ossington here. They're both cash only. But I think there's cash only in those situations doesn't mean you're not accountable. Like, those people are accounting for it, but you just can't.
You don't know how many bowls of soup.
Exactly.
Oh, how many bowls of pho?
No,
I mean, they can say they sold 100 and they've sold 400.
Yeah, but then you've got pho restaurants that do accept Visa, like up in Woodbridge.
There are some
restaurants that are more accountable than others.
No, of course. Mm-hmm.
Well,
he's just talking about select ones.
I was going to say, the only reason I ever have a $5 bill in my pocket is to go to Tim Hortons morning. And then that's my two toonies. That's my two toonies. That's all I need.
You can even swipe your.
Exactly. Your debit card.
Remember, Tim Hortons card.
For the longest time, Hortons wouldn't take debit cards. Now they do. They had to. Yeah. They had to.
Hortons was cash.
For the longest time, Hortons didn't take any credit cards.
Yeah. This was like a 15-year phenomenon.
They didn't even take debit cards.
No, they took nothing. It was just cash.
Mm-hmm. My dad, I have a wallet that was his. It's not a wallet. It's a, what do they call it? Like a credit card thing.
You mean like a billfold? Or is it like one of those
money
folds?
Clip.
No,
clip.
I have this. Uh-huh. This is my dad's old. Right. It's like basically it's a credit card wallet. Mm-hmm. And then I had his billfold that was where you put your cash. And I lost it this summer. And so that was the only thing I ever had that had cash in it. Now I just have... Like, I have cash in my pocket today because I had pho last night. And they have the cool thing about this restaurant.
Of course they do.
They have an ATM in it.
Right there.
Which they get $1.75 off mm-hmm. every transaction. Hey. There's a story. What a great story about getting so hammered before a curling match. This is such a Canadian story. It was a national curling event.
Out in Alberta.
Yes.
The Red Deer Cup.
The Red
Deer
Cup.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Red Deer Championship.
Man, we're both just trying to find the story.
That's the most prestigious cup after.
Team ejected
Hardys.
From World Curling Tour event in Alberta for being too drunk. The team skipped by Jamie Coe, that featured 2014 Olympic champion Ryan Fry, ejected from the Bonspiel over the weekend for what organizers called unsportsmanlike behavior resulting from excessive drinking. The team was tossed from the Curling Classic Saturday night. The move was announced via Twitter on Sunday by the World Curling Tour, which oversees the event.
By the way, there's so much in there. Did you know there was a World Curling Tour?
No.
Neither did I.
They were upstairs in the lounge beforehand, and everything kind of seemed normal. Until the bar staff eventually cut them off, and then it was time for them to go curl. That was probably an unfortunate thing for them, because they couldn't curl. I mean, that's a great Canadian story.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people that curl. you know, half of why they curl is the social.
Because you can drink and do it.
Well, you can drink and do it, or afterwards you're sitting up in the bar. I mean, it's a big social event.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, when I grew up in Moose Jaw, the golf course was known as the MJ Golf and Curling Club, not Country Club.
MJGC.
The CC, MJCC. Mm-hmm. And in those days, not only did everyone drink during the curling, everyone smoked too, because they used to have these high ashtrays, like an ashtray on a stand.
Oh, yeah.
Next to the house.
Little pedestal.
Yeah. Mm. And I know what a great sport this is. You can drink beer and smoke while you're doing it. And it's perfectly great.
Yeah.
This Fry guy was the focus of the game because of his history, but he broke three brooms during the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They trashed the locker room, apparently, too.
He was the 2014 Olympic champion. Yeah. He was ejected.
Broke three brooms. There was, of course, foul language and a little bit of disruption with the sheets beside them, so people are trying to play, and these drunken Canadian curlers are on the ice.
Yeah. I love it. He said it was the organizers call unsportsmanlike behavior resulting from excessive drinking.
Oh yes.
Well, you got it's got all the elements. Mm-hmm. You're semi hammered. There's a broom in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know these new. They're not new anymore. But when I was a kid, they were all the corn brooms, right? You know,
You
had to sweep it with this. You know, broom that looked...
It was completely different back in the
day. Yeah, now you've got the sponges. You sort of just...
That made me want to try curling. Because when I used to see the guy with the brooms, I think... That's too much work for me. Yeah. No, thank you.
So my mom's a big curler. She runs it out of the North Halton Golf Course.
Yeah, I know where that is.
I've seen it.
And,
we've seen it.
Well, she runs the women's curling, and I worked at the town, so I randomly found one of these old brooms.
The corn brooms
that they used to use. So I've been trying to get my mom to use this forever, but...
You know, at North Halton there, where your mom hangs out, that's where we did the Johnny Slapshot fundraiser.
Yeah.
But I just can't remember why I was there. I was returning a cart once, playing there, and they do what we did in Moose Jaw, is in the summertime, they use the curling area to store all the golf clubs. And so when I worked at the golf course as a kid, I used to go get people's golf clubs, which we had stored on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I was always fascinated by the fact that there was ashtrays all over the place.
Well, we've talked about that before. The the Dominion store near me, there was ashtrays at the end of the aisles. So people smoked while they were getting their groceries. It's just bizarre.
The other guys apparently were trying to control Ryan. And according to this article, the drunken curler got past the point of being able to tell him anything. Well, I love that.
Humble and Fred won't disappear this morning. Not till the show is over.
More from the Best of Humble and Fred Week coming up on the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. I'm Philip Hong. First, we have a couple of very important announcements.
We also want to remind you that if you're a business looking to employ people in the cannabis industry, or you're somebody looking to transition in your career, Wednesday, November 28th at the Pearson Convention Center on Steeles Avenue, it is the Cannabis Career Network Career Fair. Impressive networking opportunities, the right job for the right people, staffing problems solved. If you need help navigating the new laws, you can have your questions answered by experts. If you're looking to transition into the legal from the dark arts of illegal cannabis,
the gray market.
I'm going to tell you quickly, I tried to order stuff online yesterday from the OCS. Mm-hmm. I found it clunky.
Oh, yeah.
I went online, and by the way, they're back up and running. They're saying it's a two-day delivery window. But I just found their selection and their interface a little bit clunky. And so I went old school. I ordered it from somewhere else. Okay? Arrest me. Make sure you check it out. Cannabis Career Network. Wednesday, November 28th. Pearson Convention Center.
Look at you in your nice sweater.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, thank you.
Even watching the hockey game last night. You know, this cannabis thing has been a bonanza. Because people are still grappling with how can you advertise it? Well, one way you can definitely advertise it is tell the public the concerns, dangers, cautions that you should take surrounding it. And I'm telling you, man, I don't know how much regular TV you watch, but it's cha-ching, cha-ching for these people. There's tons of those commercials. Mm-hmm. Cannabis, what you can do, what you can't do, and watch this and watch that, and the world's going to end, and it's bizarre.
Well, so. I don't watch almost any regular television other than, you know, golf on the weekends, but, you know.
You're a metrosexual type guy, right? All you downtown guys don't watch a lot. Yeah. You're cable cutters, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I am aware that there's advertising dollars to be earned.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you where another great place to advertise cannabis. Right here on the Home Alone French Show.
Oh, no, I know. I'm just, I think the major networks at this point are just somewhere, they're finding their way that way. Mm-hmm. But they're sure taking the government money, all the, again, the cautionary commercials.
Well, maybe all this advertising is the reason that they're losing money. I just got to find this article. It's one of the stories I was going to present to you this morning. That the government's losing dough. Where is this? God. You know, there's a story. It was sent. Where is this story? Basically, the OCS, pardon me.
Yes.
Has lost $8 million selling weed.
What?
Yeah. They can't. It's funny. I don't know. We can maybe talk about this with our lawyer, Eric, later this morning. But however they have set this up, and I can't find the article. But the gist of it is basically that in the first month of cannabis, you know, being legal, the Ontario government is losing money. Now, nobody who ever sold weed.
That's right. Right, John?
It's true.
No, they don't. You don't do it and lose money. Only the government could F up weed.
No, I agree. I guess the one concession we could make is the infrastructure they have to set up is a lot different than, you know, Larry down the street. So,
but if they contracted Larry.
After a certain date, they should be making lots of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's the story now out of Toronto somewhere. The Ontario cannabis store is set to lose $8 million off of the province's money.
It's not even a store.
No, it's online.
What would happen if they had a store?
The store is not going to be profitable in its first year. But that's like a lot of things.
Yeah, it's
like
every business loses some money. Yeah.
It's a projected loss, I'm sorry.
But when you think about it, though, online, like where is that money going? You bring in some people, they set up the online store. I mean, everybody has them.
Yeah, servers aren't that expensive.
Get the people that do winners to come and do it for you.
Or why don't you get the people that are already doing it? You know, I've mentioned this website several times, and I assume, I guess it's illegal, but orderweedonline.ca, I think. But they don't seem to be. They're not projecting Q4 losses. You know, buddy who lives down there in Parkdale, he's not losing any money. But again, it's infrastructure. It's just a cute thing to say because we know that eventually it's going to be so much revenue for this province.
Well, LCBO seems to do all right.
Yeah, they're doing fine. Mm-hmm.
And that's why they don't want to let that go. And I guess that's what they have visions of that, right? Just the LCBO and then selling. But, you know, they don't have the competition. And we've said it a million times in the show. Mm-hmm. They don't have the competition at the LCBO, which they will have this way.
Oh, yeah.
But they'll find their way, I'm sure.
And also didn't have Kathleen Wynne either, because if you remember, it wasn't just OCS Online. Mm-hmm. They also had to set up the actual physical stores when that was still a thing. So it might have been costs that were related to that, firing people.
Listen, the fact that they're losing money is just a joke. They're not losing money. It's projected losses over revenue coming in by the end of their fiscal, but they're not. Don't worry, Ontario. The government, even the government, can't screw this up. They will eventually make money, because as we've mentioned, as you say, make your own beer and wine sucks. Make your own weed. A friend of mine from Georgetown, a young fellow named...
Well, aren't you arguing against yourself there? Because maybe they won't for those reasons. Maybe they will never realize the cash bonanza they wanted to.
Well, yeah. No, but you know, it may not be the LCBO in terms of profit, oh, okay. But they're going to make money. But maybe to your point that, you know, the LCBO doesn't have any competition. The OSC, OCS will have competition. Mm-hmm. But still, I'll tell you what, the convenience, if I could just go down two blocks of that where that liquor store is and buy my weed, I would.
No, I understand.
Yeah. Even though my boy Sean brought in some homegrown.
Oh, Georgetown Betty.
What is this called? What's the name of this stuff?
Orange Cookie.
Orange Cookie.
Orange Cookie.
Look what Sean grew. Doesn't that smell good?
It's like a funky mint.
Yeah, this is. It's like, you know, sometimes weed smells a little bit like funky mint and feet.
Let me smell that again.
Yeah, it doesn't. It smells
like
a little bit like feet.
Thing, yeah.
Oh, can you put on some Jimi Hendrix?
Oh, right. Okay. Jesus Christ.
Why?
Put on some Jimi
Hendrix.
So I'm a metrosexual because I don't watch regular television, and you want
to cord cutter,
and you want to get all stoned and look at blacklight posters of Jimi Hendrix. Oh, that's awesome. But you can make this yourself, and it's just as good.
No, I know.
As something the government is going to sell. I know I'm arguing against myself. I don't think the government is eventually going to lose money.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I think the best tact would have been leave everything the way it was, and just go to all existing business and say, we're going to tax you.
Yeah.
And let everybody else do the work like this business does.
License it.
We run a business. Mm-hmm. We collect HST and... for the government, and we pay the government taxes and sales tax, and why couldn't the weed industry have been that way too?
Yeah, they just need accountants. They don't need sellers.
They just let it go.
Mm-hmm. Listen, to your point, has no one in this government, have they never seen a gangster movie?
Probably
like,
not.
Seriously, because what you just described is the Godfather model.
Right.
You go to everybody who's doing this business, and you say, listen, we're going to offer you a little protection. We're going to take a little bit of your business each week to make sure you're okay, to make sure the standards are good for our clients.
Right.
And if you don't comply, somebody gets whacked. No big deal. But... they didn't have to do this themselves. They could have just licensed everybody that was unlicensed.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah. But see, they just see... It was bigger to that than them. Mm-hmm. The potential in their eyes was bigger than that.
And it may very well turn out to be.
And you know what? The black market will keep them honest. They're going to compete with the black market, and maybe that will make the government end of the business run sharper when they have their feet to the fire.
Well, knowing that, unlike the LCBO, where people don't really have an alternative, and the example we always use is that, you know, I know a buddy in Georgetown who can grow weed, but I don't know anyone who makes their own gin.
Right.
You know, I don't. And if they do, it probably would kill you.
Wouldn't be gin.
So the government will have... a de facto, as they say, competition because, you know, homegrown kits, you know, we're going to talk about them anyways, but there's a great example of, you know, I don't know what, let's get Sean in here for a second, because homegrown kits is one of our clients, homegrownkits.ca, for a couple $100, you get a kit, 21-piece kit, you get 4 plants out of that, it takes about 90 days to grow, so if you started now, come, you know, February-ish, you could have enough weed to carry you through the next year. I mean, I know I talk about how much I do it, but I'm not smoking multiples of grams a month. You know, I don't need very much. Most people don't.
No, and I'd agree there. I only grow enough. I wish we had known about these homegrown kits I wish I had known about this months ago, because this is really, that's all I really need is... So, enough to get me through the winter.
Well, I was going
to
say, so your family, how many plants did you grow? Of course, only 4, because that's what's legal.
Of course, yes. No, I only had 2 this year. I had 2 different kinds, and that was, did them both indoor instead of doing them outdoor.
And
this
how many
year.
Grams would you get for a couple plants?
I think in total. See, and this is my friends and I sharing. So I think this was 2 pounds total, so a pound each plant, about that.
Which is pretty good.
And so, yeah, we each took our, you know. ounce and went along.
But see, that option doesn't exist. You know, I mean, yeah, you can make your own beer, but it's shite.
No. Well, I can draw a parallel. You said that stuff's good, too, so you're not smoking a lot, because it's good, right?
Well, I don't smoke a lot anyway.
Okay, but when you say smoke a lot, do you mean quantity or frequency?
Both.
Okay. Well, I can draw that parallel, what I was saying yesterday about craft beer, and it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one really good craft beer, and I'm satisfied. Like, oh, I really enjoyed that. Where the watery mainstream beer, you tend to be, you keep drinking it or something.
Yeah.
Drop! Canada's National Morning Show.
This edition of the Best of Humble and Fred is powered by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Gig Sky, Spearhead Brewing Company, Strain Print, and Cannabis Career Network.